Postwar Germany and Willy Brandt. One must be careful in interpreting the fact that Germans, themselves, seem to believe in the exterminations. Certainly, most individual Germans seem to concede the myth, and not all do so in order to stay out of trouble. However, it is clear that the German people were no better situated to see the truth than anybody else. Many might, indeed, have observed local Jews being deported, not to return after the war, and this may have given some an even more vivid conviction in support of the extermination hoax than that which holds generally. The basic observation to make, relative to the views of individual Germans, is that the standard sort of quote-unquote information on this subject has been available to them, and they are thus just as innocently deluded as other nationalities. The West German government, which, by interminable war crimes trials, now being held 30 or more years after the alleged crimes, by instruction in the schools, and now by means of naked terror, as shown in the Staglik episode, does everything possible to keep the lie propped up, and to prevent open discussion, is a different matter, because the cause for its behavior is not innocent misunderstanding. The basic fact is that the claim of the Bonn government to be a German government is somewhat tenuous. The entire political structure of West Germany was established by the US government. This includes the control of the newspapers and other media, the control of the schools, and the constitution of this Bundesrepublik. As a puppet creation, this quote-unquote German political establishment necessarily had an interest in the lies of the conquerors, and behaved accordingly. That is very simple, and this situation is perfectly illustrated by the career of the man who was Chancellor of West Germany during the greater part of the time, when this book was being written, Herr Willy Brandt, an alias. Brandt's real name is Herbert Ernst Karl Fromm. Fromm was his mother's maiden name. Marxist Brandt left Germany after the Hitler takeover, and acquired Norwegian citizenship. After the German invasion of Norway in 1940, he slipped into neutral Sweden, and eventually was given a position in the press corps there. It was none other than Willy Brandt who, during the war, was transmitting the concocted propaganda stories that had supposedly originated in Stockholm and ended up on the pages of the New York Times. After the defeat of Germany, Brandt naturally decided that the atmosphere back home had improved, so he returned to Germany, resumed German citizenship, and entered West Berlin politics as a social democrat. He eventually became mayor of West Berlin, and acquired a press aide, Hans Hirschfeld, a German Jew who, along with Kempner, Marcuse and colleagues, had been employed in the OSS during the war. During the 1961 espionage trial in the US of R.A. Soblin, which resulted in Soblin being sentenced to life imprisonment, a government witness, Mrs. J.K. Becker, who had been a courier in a Soviet espionage ring during the war but had turned FBI informer later, testified that she had carried information from Hirschfeld to Soblin for transmission to Moscow. Mrs. Becker was the principal government witness, so the obvious answer of the defense should have been to produce Hirschfeld. Indeed, Soblin's defense counsel said that he had attempted to convince Hirschfeld to come to the U.S. to testify, but Hirschfeld declined, at first on the grounds that the publicity associated with his appearance as a witness could hurt Brandt, who was engaged in an election campaign. Hirschfeld was also concerned about the possibility that he might be charged with some sort of offense if he journeyed to the U.S. Brandt, in New York during the controversy involving Hirschfeld, naturally defended his former close associate, who had by that time been living in retirement in Germany. In order to give the defense every opportunity to make a case for Soblin, the government offered Hirschfeld immunity against prosecution for, quote, any past acts or transactions, unquote, if he would come to the U.S. to testify, adding only that Hirschfeld could be prosecuted for any perjury committed in a retrial of Soblin. Hirschfeld nevertheless declined to appear in Soblin's defense. Brandt eventually became Chancellor of West Germany, and won the Nobel Peace Prize for 1971 for his efforts to build friendlier relations with the Eastern Bloc, his Ostpolitik. Brandt seemed to be riding high, but by 1974, various Brandt policies had brought his Social Democratic Party to a new low in popular esteem, and even SPD politicians in long-term SPD strongholds expressed the belief that they were going to lose their next elections. Fortuitously for the SPD, the Günter Guillaume scandal erupted in late April with Guillaume's arrest as an East German espionage agent. Although it had been known that Guillaume had been a member of an East Berlin espionage organization, he had been cleared by the Brandt government for a high post in the inner circle of Brandt's associates and advisors. The scandal brought Willy Brandt's downfall with his resignation on May 7, 1974. Brandt was succeeded by Helmut Schmidt, whose leadership terminated the decline of the SPD. Clearly, a career such as Brandt's post-war career is possible only in a country in which treason has become a normal part of political life, so it is not in the least surprising that the Bonn government is a defender of the hoax. An interesting objection is the claim that nobody would dare invent such a tale as the 6 million legend. Nobody had the extraordinary imagination required, and even if he did, the obvious risks in telling such gigantic lies should dissuade him. The argument amounts to the claim that the mere existence of the legend implies the truth of its essentials, so I suppose we can classify it as the hoaxer's ontological argument. What is interesting about this objection is its superficially logical quality. Indeed, I imagine that this calculation accounts in good measure for the widespread acceptance of the legend. People assume that nobody would be so brazen as to invent such lies. Nevertheless, the logic is not sound, for history affords us numerous examples of popular acceptance of gigantic lies, and in this connection, we can again cite witchcraft hysteria as precedent for the psychological essentials of the 6 million hoax.